can result in us becoming Pharisees. I don't even know how to say Pharisaical or whatever you call it. Remember, it was the religiously robed, recently washed, truth-filled, Bible-believing, Bible text-quoting church leaders who gathered in a committee to discuss how to crucify Christ. Why would they do that? Well, perhaps they Googled some of the things that Christ said. In Matthew 5:20, it says, "For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." They might have read Matthew 23:13. "Woe to you teachers of the law, Pharisees, hypocrites. You shut the kingdom of heaven in men's faces. You yourselves do not enter, nor will you let those enter who are trying to enter." Their righteousness or their rightness was challenged and it didn't feel good. And you have to admit, when ours is challenged, it doesn't feel good either. So they sat in a Protect the Truth committee planning how they could catch Jesus. I mean, why would you kill somebody who thinks differently than you do? We wouldn't do that, would we? What would they do this time? How would they try to come to the place where they once again put their feelings ahead of the scriptures? Well, there was a clever young lawyer who had an idea. He said, "We've been targeting the wrong target. If you want to get to the king, you first have to capture the pawns. And so we need to confuse his followers and place questions in their minds." And so the young lawyer continued with his argument. "So as not to raise suspicion, let's have the temple secretary ask one of the disciples why Jesus doesn't pay the temple tax." And that was in our scripture reading this morning. "Well, yes," said another Pharisee, "that's a good idea. If he pays the temple tax, he admits that he's not a religious teacher or prophet. And if he doesn't pay the temple tax, then he's disloyal to the temple." So they laid this plot, and they selected Peter for the hook. "Peter," the temple secretary said in Matthew 17:24, "doesn't your teacher pay the temple tax?" Now, Peter, not thinking through all the issues, figured they were suggesting Jesus was disloyal to the temple, and he knew that Jesus wasn't disloyal to the temple, so he quickly said, of course Jesus pays the temple tax. And then the temple tax collector replied, "Well, you know, we've had the records here, and I just don't see where he's paid." Well, people probably started arguing about the sloppy records and how they keep the records there at the temple tax. And the temple tax collector continued that they had just received a clean audit, and the argument went downhill from there. And so to be justified, so Peter can be justified, he can demonstrate that he's right. He goes into the house where Jesus is kept to get a receipt for the temple tax. But before he has a chance to say a word, Jesus says, "What do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth collect duty and taxes? From their own sons or from others?" Peter, quickly to respond, says, "From others." Jesus said, "Then the sons are exempt." So Peter receives his answer before he even asks the question. It's the Pharisees who can gloat this time. Jesus is exempt from the temple tax, but of his spiritual claims, if he pays the temple tax, then he admits that he's not a prophet. And then Jesus said, "But so we may not offend them, go and take and throw out a line. Take the first fish you catch, open its mouth, and you will find 4 drachma coin. Take it and give it to them for my tax and for yours." "But Jesus," Peter exclaimed, "it's not right for you to pay the tax. You just said you're a prophet. You don't have to pay the temple tax. The sons are exempt, so you shouldn't do this." And Jesus said, "We will pay the tax so that we may not offend them." So that we may not offend. Remember that when you talk with members and non-members in the church and out of the church. Let's not offend just because we're right. Let's not gloat because we have the truth. And let's not press the case even though we could win. Peter, on the other hand, would not hesitate to tell somebody if he was right. Whether he was calling down fire from heaven on a Samaritan village, like James and John suggested, or whether it was him cutting off the ear of the high priest's servant, as Peter would later do himself, when he's right, and he wanted everybody to know it. He loved to gaze with malice pleasure. Peter loved to gloat. He loved to be on the right side, and we all do. But now Peter was confused. Jesus was making a concession to the temple tax Pharisees. He was doing something that he didn't have to do. He paid the bill, and he actually didn't know it. He was slapped, and he turned the other cheek. The lesson Jesus wanted to teach was as much for Peter as it was for the slippery lawyers who stood just a few steps away. There is something dangerous about being right. It can create a sense of superiority. When being right is more important than being sensitive to human needs, when holding to right church policies is more important than people, when being right is more important than being righteous, then we have taken rightness as our gospel instead of Jesus. We've made a God out of the truth instead of the Lord. Now, Jesus was right. He was not obliged to pay the temple tax because he was a prophet. But so that we may not offend Peter, go and pay it anyway. You know, I found out that when we're the center of the universe and my needs are the most important, I don't care if I cut you off on the freeway because I deserve to be first. Such arrogance can be a national disease where our country believes it is right and it can offend other nations. Such arrogance can be a church disease where our church believes it is right and it can be offensive, even intentionally offensive. Such arrogance can be a personal disease resulting in pride for each of us and for the church. It is so easy to be caught up in ourselves. Why do we stand in line to be the first one to get the new iPhone or the smartphone or whatever it is, if not to gloat? Why do we pay more for the brand that's no better than the generic, unless it's to gloat? It is so easy to find ourselves righteously selfish at the head of the line and feeling like we're the most important, forgetting all those around us. The danger of being right is the danger of pride and selfishness, gazing with malice pleasure as we stand in the church, thanking God that we're not like those other folks who worship on the wrong day and eat those disgusting things. When we have righteousness that comes from Jesus rather than from ourselves, we can be secure. We don't have to prove anything. Paul was right. He knew it meant nothing to eat food that had been sacrificed to idols. He could eat it with a clear conscience. He was right, but others were wrong whose conscience was bothered by eating such food. But he didn't use his freedom to gloat. He said, "Be careful," in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, "that the exercise of your freedom doesn't become a stumbling block to the weak. If what I eat causes my brother to fall into sin, I will never eat meat again, and so that I will not be the cause of them to fall." Paul chose not to offend with his righteousness. Pay the tax, Peter. Pay the tax. We don't want to offend these people. It does no good to being right and bring offense along the way. Jesus said the greatest command was to love the Lord with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. I have a question for you this morning. Would you rather live next door to a loving atheist or an offensive Christian? Would you rather live next door to a loving Muslim or an offensive Christian? Would you rather spend time with a loving Catholic or a legalistic, hateful Adventist? Would you rather be a loving Catholic than a hateful Adventist? There are those who have elevated what they believe over how they live. What is the point of doctrines if it's not to make us more loving? What is the point of teaching if it isn't to help us love our neighbor? And what is the point of the church if it isn't to show the love of Jesus in our own communities? We are not to wear the 28 fundamental beliefs like some kind of immunity necklace that leads us into heaven. James said, "What good is it, dear brother, if you say you have faith, but you don't know it by your actions? Can that kind of faith save anyone? Suppose you see a brother or sister who has no food or clothing, and you say, 'Goodbye, have a nice day, stay warm, eat well,' but you don't give the person any food or clothing. What good does it do them?" So you see, faith by itself isn't enough. Unless it produces good deeds, it's dead and useless. Now, someone may argue some people have faith, others have good deeds. But I say, how can you show me your faith if you don't have good deeds? I will show you my faith by my good deeds. You say you have faith, for you believe that there is one God, good. The demons believe this, and they tremble in terror. The demons believe the 28 fundamental beliefs. There is a danger of being right, of using rightness as a badge of honor rather than a badge of service. Instead of finding common ground with our neighbors, too often we seek the battleground because we're right. It's a little like a man one time who I met, and he said, told me, he said, "What denomination do you belong to?" And I said, "Well, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist." At which point he opened a rather large briefcase that was hanging on his shoulder, and he thumbed his way through a number of file folders and pulled out a brochure against Seventh-day Adventists. His vision of witnessing was to attack whatever denomination you were, if it wasn't his own. Paul said in Romans 14:15, "If your brother is distressed because of what you eat, you are no longer acting in love." The greater my focus on my being right, the less my ability to be loving. The more I focus on God's righteousness and His gift of grace to me, the more I am able to not be offensive to my neighbors. I want to close this morning with a kind of silly little story that I found, but even though it's silly, it's got a point. Once upon a time in Fenton Forest, Sweet Pea the skunk, basket in hand and Daisy propped over her ear, was waiting for the nut hut to open. She wanted to be the first one in the store today because there was a special sale on chocolate-dipped almonds, and no one liked chocolate-dipped almonds better than Sweet Pea, unless perhaps it was her good friend, Freddy the Fox. She was going to be the first in the store today because Scamper's advertisement said supplies are limited and the chocolate almonds would only be available as long as they lasted. She wanted to buy some to give to her good friend Freddy. The two of them had been friends ever since Freddy had rescued one of her children from Slippery Rock right next to Crashing Creek. As she stood on the big root by the door of the Nut Hut, who would come by but Freddy the Fox? Freddy stopped and suddenly, and with a surprised look on his face, said to Sweet Pea, "What are you doing here so early? The Nut Hut doesn't open until 9:30. "Oh, no," replied Sweet Pea, "it opens at 9 this morning." "No, no, it doesn't." "Yes, it does." "No, it doesn't." "Yes, it does," they argued back and forth several times. "Well, we'll just see about that," said Freddy. "It's almost 9 o'clock now, and I will just wait and see with you who's right." "Okay, you wait," said CP, "and you'll see that I'm right." 9 o'clock came, and Scamper did not show up to unlock the door. Freddy began to smile the smile of the smug. Freddy continued to argue with Sweet Pea. 5 minutes passed, and Scamper did not show up. Again, Freddy began to gloat, began to gaze with malice pleasure. 15 minutes, Scamper still did not show up. All the time, Freddy and Sweet Pea's friendship began to deteriorate as they argued over who was right. Finally, close to 9:30, Scamper bounced up to the narrow path right to the front porch of the Nut Hut. Immediately, Freddy and Sweet Pea said in unison, "When does the Nut Hut open today?" He said, "You know, you guys want those chocolate-covered almonds, don't you? Well, it opens in just a few minutes at 9:30, just like it said in the advertisement." C gloated Freddy as he danced a little jig and sang, "I'm right, I'm right, I'm right, I told you so." "Well," said Sweet Pea, "I'm not going to wait any longer for those chocolate-covered almonds. They probably are old anyway." And Sweet Pea walked away in a stink. Wise Old Owl, who had been watching all this from a tree limb, said, "Gloating over being right may not only lose you friends, but chocolate-covered almonds." It feels good to be right, but sometimes it's very hurtful and dangerous. You guys know where Bonded Gas Station is down here in town, kind of catacorner from Rota Fields. They used to have a big billboard down there, and it says, "It's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice." Let's remember that this morning as we leave here today and carry on through this next week as we meet friends and family. Thank you.